Did you know in the first post-COVID research published on summer learning that it was found that children involved in math-focused summer programs tend to score higher on standardized math tests and have higher math grades than other students? This is the year we follow the research and join the growing number of schools that are ordering Summer Pops math workbooks for their kids. Summer Pops is an easy, low-cost, and effective summer math program designed for elementary and middle schools. Summer Pops is not an app. It requires zero screen time for our kids. Many of our listeners have already ordered Summer Pops for this year, giving their students the leg up that they need and giving their parents the support they want. You can visit summerpopsworkbooks.com/research to view the studies yourself and then request your free sample books. See firsthand why more schools are providing Summer Pops for their students. That's summerpopsworkbooks.com. Principal Matters Podcast, episode 387. Hi, friends. This is Will Parker, host of Principal Matters, the School Leaders Podcast, where each week we bring you inspiring, innovative, and imaginative ideas for your own school leadership. This week, I'm back with my co-host, Dr. Jen Schwanke from Dublin City Schools, author of four great books. Jen, we spent a couple of episodes in February talking about your new book. Congratulations. Why don't you remind listeners the title and where they can find it?
Absolutely. The Principal's Guide to Conflict Management. And they can find that at Amazon, and they can find that at the ASCD site. But Will, I actually have news that I did not tell you. I haven't even told you yet, even though we just spent about a half an hour talking about other things. This was selected as the ASCD member book. So any ASCD members probably already have it in their mailbox. But if not, take a look at Amazon or ASCD to get yourself a copy.
Jen Schwanke.
I know.
That makes me
for
so
our
excited.
Our listeners, I swear, Will and I just chit-chatted for a half an hour and I forgot to tell him that. So you got the first news. And Will, of course, as always, you're the guy that's so happy for other people. So thank you.
I can't wait. Okay. This week, I realized that in one of the previous episodes you and I did, I didn't say the topic and just started in. So let me remind listeners what we're going to be talking about this week. This week, I want to talk about accountability. And I want to talk about, Jen, how can we see that word as not a dirty word? And so I'm not exactly sure. I have so many thoughts. Let me just begin here because it's hard for me to wrestle all these thoughts concisely. But this past year, I've had the privilege of working through the book. This book has been around for 20 years, the epic book by Patrick Lencioni, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And as I've been using this book, and I've used it both in my own leadership, but also in coaching other leaders and in mastermind work, the areas of dysfunction that he talks about, and I'm just going to list them. Dysfunctional teams have an absence of trust, fear of conflict, lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, which is where I want to focus, and inattention to results. If you flip those over to positive statements, then you would say strong teams trust one another, engage in unfiltered conflict around ideas, commit to decisions and plans, hold one another accountable for delivering them, and focus on achievement and the collective result. I would add celebrate. So as I'm looking at that list of descriptives of teams, for some reason, whenever I get to accountability, I seem to just have to stop because there's something about that word that makes me uncomfortable. And so I want to go there, Jen, because I think it's important, but I just want to first talk about that word and why in our work is that word sometimes a dirty word?
Well, I have a theory, an answer. And I agree. I think accountability has taken on, that word itself has taken on such a meaning for educators, and it doesn't feel good, right? It feels yucky. And you know me, I love to look at history. And I actually studied this when I was in a doctoral program. And I think, and many people agree with me, that this word took on a life of its own with the publication of Eight Nation at Risk in 1983. So many people that were around at that time will remember that, you know, for teachers, for principals, for school leaders, that report was really a scathing critique on their work. It was a warning. It was a call to action. And the word that kept being used was accountability. For parents of school children, the report was kind of a frightening summary of all the ways schools were failing America, were falling behind. It really predicted our entire nation's downfall. So people were really scared. And so then what happened was, as a result, an intense school accountability era. And it was based on academic rigor. And so superintendents, principals, their teams were focused so much on improving student achievement and were held to these intense accountability standards that were developed at a federal, state, and local level. So as educators, there we were. This report had come out and just kind of blindsided us. And then the reaction was swift and I would say not as thoughtful as it should have been. And so people got scared. And, you know, principals were just trying to do their best to hold teachers accountable. Teachers were trying to hold students accountable. Parents were trying to hold districts accountable. And that word then, even as I'm saying it, I feel a little bit of an iron taste in my mouth saying accountability, because what it was meant to do was provide a good product. What I think it did is it created anxiety.
I think you're right. And I think that so much of what I've seen in the, and you and I spent an entire episode recently talking about systems, but so much of what I've seen in, let's take unhealthy systems for just a moment. I want to be distinct that there are schools and organizations that have created really healthy, well understood, well defined structures for their teachers, their students, their communities. I know everyone to paint everyone with the same brushstroke. At the same time, you and I both work with people who feel really frustrated by places where things feel dysfunctional or have become toxic, or where accountability has become this monster of layers and layers of additional work that seem to drive people away from the whole reason they came into education in the first place. And so I think the hard question for me is, how do we redeem that word? How do we bring that word back to what is still important? Because if the most highly effective teams, both within business or education, industry, pick your fill in the blank communities, have a strong commitment to holding each other accountable, then there's got to be a benefit to good accountability. So I would like to take a few minutes and just park on why we should, as leaders, step into healthy accountability. But I don't want to do that without recognizing what you just said, which is that we're stepping into that conversation with a bad taste in our mouth, because I think a lot of us have come up against the political movements that have pushed accountability, shoved accountability down our throats. And we've had decades now to see the poor outcomes of that kind of accountability.
Well, and I wonder too, this is just a thought not fully formed. I wonder if teachers are more anxious about that word than leaders. Because remember when that accountability era came, we were redoing teacher evaluation systems, which wasn't a bad thing. But with it came data, show me how you're moving your kids along. And with a poorly executed conversation, a teacher could feel like a failure when they actually had a really strong classroom environment. They were moving students along, but the environments or the demographics of students they were given meant that the data wasn't a fair picture of what was going on in their classrooms. And so, you know, principal comes in with a new evaluation tool, maybe, and says, show me the data, show me what's happening. The teacher gets the evaluation and they feel scalded by what felt like an unfair evaluation. But yet I do know that school leaders, I think we believe in accountability, right? We want people to be able to look at what they've done, reflect on it, make changes, look at what they've done, reflect on it, make changes. And so, like you said it beautifully, how do we redeem this word? And the redemption, in my eyes, is to stop being scared of it and start allowing for different measures of accountability. And as a principal, I Well, I have a story about that, but I want to see what you think about that first.
No, I'm going to ask you to tell your story because what I would like to, because I want to take some time and talk about a little bit of what I've seen in some research around accountability that can be a better helpful models in their stories. But I want to hear your story first, Jen.
I have a friend, and I mentioned to you offline that I had just been to a college reunion with my college friends, and one of them is worried about her child's teacher. And she said, I'm really worried because I've looked at the data. She had actually requested some data that most parents wouldn't know to request. And she said, I'm just worried my daughter isn't going to make enough growth in literacy this year. And I said, well, tell me about the, and she was ready, right? She was going to go into the principal. She was going to raise some heck. She did not like this classroom environment. I said, well, hold on. Tell me what a day is like for your daughter. And she said, oh, this teacher is lovely. She's so sweet. And her voice even changed as she's telling me this. She's so kind to the students. Whenever my daughter has a bad day, she calls me or lets me know. But there are very few bad days because the classroom is just a really calming, lovely place. And the students are reading and stuff. I just don't know if they're going to progress as quickly or as fast as I want my daughter to progress. And I said, now think about what you just said. If we use just data as a measure, this teacher may be a failure. But what if your daughter, when she's 49 years old, looks back and says, my teacher in second grade was my favorite? She was gentle, she was kind, she was giving, she was pro. Conversation with that family, whatever it is. I said, sometimes that one measure that as a nation we have been trained to look for, which is progress, 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 achievement, achievement, achievement. What if that measure is more than it should be? Maybe it's just part of what we want our children to experience. Maybe next year you're going to get the teacher that has those diphthongs and diagrams and all the literacy things. Maybe that will be next year. But school is a journey. And accountability means so many things. And I don't want to offend anybody or have anybody misunderstand me that I say data doesn't matter. I think it's a part of a very complex puzzle.
I agree. Let me tell a story that I think will affirm what you just said, Jen. And that is, I came across this story back in 2017. NPR did a showcase of a offshore oil rig that Shell Oil Company had launched called the Ursa. And you may be wondering what in the world does this have to do with education, but at the time, offshore oil rigs, and I'm from a state with a lot of oil and gas, so this fascinated me. But offshore oil rigs have a lot of injuries and fatalities. They're high pressured. There's a lot of high pressured pipes. There's a lot of room for error. And so, if a man or a woman working on one of those turns the wrong lever or pushes the wrong button, something could happen. And so, they were having high numbers of people on these rigs who were not just being injured, but maimed and dying. And so when they were getting ready to launch their largest one in the fleet at that time, the manager of that ship, his name was Rick Fox. Rick was asking himself those hard questions of how do I ensure better safety, but also high productivity in this place? This is our job, but I want these people to live to tell about it. And at the time, and this is a part of that report, he was going through some struggles with his teenage son at home. And so he had hired a counselor to work with him and his son. And he began to develop some really strong communication skills. And so for the first time in his life, he was asking questions and being vulnerable and communicating with his son. And so the person that he was working with was someone who also did this work in not just family settings, but corporate settings. And her name was Claire Nuer. And Claire Nuer was a French citizen whose family had survived the Holocaust. And in her adult life had developed this counseling consulting company. And when Rick recognized her skill set, he said to her, well, could you come to my oil rig? And I would like for you to begin to work with mostly men on this ship to learn how to ask questions and open up when they're making mistakes and admit when they've failed, or acknowledge when someone else has done something worth celebrating. And so the result of all of this work that she did with these oil rig workers was that after they launched this oil rig, Shell realized that a year later that they were having 84% fewer accidents than any other rig on the fleet out at the time. And they had the greatest productivity of all the other rigs. And so there were some professors from both Harvard and Yale who heard the same story, and they went there and were researching the social dynamics happening on the ship. And Jen, they coined this phrase, which I laughed when I heard this. They said, these are the marks of a quote unquote learning culture. A learning culture is a place where people can admit when they're making mistakes, ask for help, celebrate when someone does something right, be vulnerable with when they about how they're feeling and thinking, and then measure results with celebration. And I was thinking, well, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing in schools? But the reason I wanted to start there is because when I think about accountability, and I get that yucky feeling about how it's been so politicized. But then when I think about the negative, when I think about the positive sides, I think about stories like this. Here's a group of people who, once they learned the importance of that cycle of feedback and reflection and talking to one another and opening up and asking for help, they created a place of stronger accountability. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. Why is IXL used in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts? Because it works. Research across 45 states showed that IXL schools outperform other schools on state tests. With IXL, you get a personalized online learning and teaching solution that helps you improve achievement, empower teachers, track progress, and more. This one platform for K-12 helps teachers accomplish what normally would require dozens of other tools. For example, as students practice skills, IXL automatically adapts to ensure each learner is always supported and challenged at the right level. IXL also provides every student with a personalized learning plan to help them close knowledge gaps effectively. One of my favorite things about IXL is their personalized test prep tool. For exams like the SAT and ACT, IXL will analyze a student's most recent score and generate a custom list of skills to help them boost their scores. If you want to take the load off of your teachers so they can do their best work, IXL can help. Learn more at IXL.com/PM today.
Well, and what strikes me about everything you just said ties me back to what you opened with. And in the book about the dysfunctions of a team, trust is so important, right? And I feel like you can be vulnerable, you can admit your mistakes, and you can ask for help and grow if you trust that nothing bad's going to happen. And it strikes me, again, these aren't necessarily fully formed thoughts, but it strikes me that accountability can be based in fear, or it can be based in trust. And if it's based in fear, that's where that yucky feeling we keep talking about comes from. If it's based in trust, then accountability isn't scary. That's why teams can be so powerful. I tell people all the time, I love my team that I work with every day. I trust them implicitly. And I, you know, when we're in flow, accountability isn't a problem at all. I've said to them, they've said to me, oh, wow, I messed that one up. Oh boy, I'm gonna have to go back and do a redo. Whereas if accountability is based in fear, you would never open your mouth and say, boy, I messed that one up, because you fear what would happen next. And so what that brings us back to is the importance of a trusting environment, trusting colleagues, trusting relationships. And you say that when you think about the important parts of strong teams. I think you even said the first thing is they trust one another.
I'm glad you said that, Jen, because I want to bring one other case study that, and again, you know me, I'm a curious person that loves to share what I'm learning with other people. So principal managers, listeners, I'll put links to these studies in the show notes. But this was something that I heard in December of 2023 on the podcast Hidden Brain, that Shankar Vedantam, who hosts that podcast, was interviewing Amy Edmondson, who from the Harvard Business School had done research on adverse medical experiences in hospitals. And in her research, she was identifying, first of all, just the difference between toxic cultures and healthy cultures within this hospital community. But as she was going through her own results, she found some data that surprised her that seemed to say the opposite. Because as she was identifying these healthy cultures versus toxic, her assumption was healthy cultures will make less mistakes, make less adverse medical diagnoses. But what she discovered was the healthier cultures had higher numbers of reported adverse medical diagnoses than the cultures she was identifying as unhealthy. So she went back into her own surveying and she found this statement that she had asked them to respond to. And the statement was this: mistakes are held against me in my organization. And the toxic culture employees marked that very high, where the healthy culture employees marked it as very low. And then the light went off as she began to do more digging into her research into these two examples. And that was that the unhealthy cultures weren't reporting their mistakes, and the healthy cultures were. And so I wanted to say that to almost bring it full circle to what you said, Jen. Data doesn't always tell you everything. Data doesn't always tell you everything.
It doesn't tell you anything, everything, and it can be, it's reflective of the eye of the beholder, so to speak. Like you can find, my boss and I joke all the time, we can find data that says what we want it to say. We can. You can find research that says what you want it to say. But in that hospital example, if you just really think about that, you know, toxic teams are scared to admit mistakes. Healthy teams will say, oh, I made a mistake. And then the answer is, oh, you did? Okay, well, let's fix it. Let's work it through. And so in terms of school leaders and how they can apply that and kind of less redeem the word accountability, the first answer to a mistake should probably be like, oh, no problem. How can we make it right? Or how can I support you? What do we need to do to work through this? I worked with somebody once who said, oh, I love a good problem because I like to solve it, right? I love to dig in and solve it. And so it strikes me that in the hospital example you gave, that, you know, an increase in reporting mistakes also implies a great deal of problem solving. Because mistakes are going to happen. We're human beings. They're going to happen all the time. But how you respond to them and how people feel when they make one strikes me as one of the most important parts of accountability and of making that word not feel so scary.
So let's apply this to both the principal and then let's apply this to his or her school. And I'm just thinking of a comment that I heard a friend of mine make who worked in district leadership a couple of years ago. We were having a conversation and he said to me, "Well, how much longer?" He said this out of frustration. "How much longer are we going to create systems within a district where we place people in responsibilities of leading a school, and then we evaluate their performance based on how many fights did they have or how much is their attendance rates?" He said, we're setting people in these positions of such complexity, and then we have these very narrow ways that we're judging whether they're being effective or not. And he said it out of frustration because he had been that leader, but then when he was in the side of support, he was seeing other people in support roles who were judging leaders based on these metrics that aren't always telling the whole story.
Exactly.
And so I want to start there first because some people listening to us may be in, we have a wide range of audience members, aspiring leaders, veteran leaders, people who support leaders. But I just think it's so important for whatever role we play that we remember how bad it is to be on the other side of a gotcha kind of leader.
Absolutely. Yep.
And how important it is for us to do what you just suggested, which is when we confront someone who's made a mistake, that they don't get a beating, quote unquote, verbally or emotionally, or in evaluations every time they make a mistake. But we actually invite them to admit when there's a challenge or mistake. Otherwise, what we're getting is a false sense of accountability, not a true accountability.
Exactly. And we never, you know, I'm sure the principals listening to this, we don't never want one of our teachers to be scared to come to us and tell us they've made a mistake. We want them to feel confident that we're there for it, you know. And I talk a lot when I present to groups about, you know, principals, you never want to fix a mistake for someone. You want to advise and guide them and be there next to them as they do the work, right? And so it strikes me that that's an important part of accountability too, is when there's a mistake, or when, I keep saying mistake, but it could be in a number of things. It could be some test results that just aren't great, or it could be a lesson that just didn't go well. It could be a common exam where the students didn't perform as you wanted, whatever it is. You know, we want people to come and be able to sit down with us and say, hey, will you just talk this through with me? Will you come and watch my class and see if there's anything that I should do differently? How principal, can you be a partner in this? And again, the principal's response, I think, in a safe environment, a trusting environment, is more along the lines of, absolutely, I would love to, rather than, well, I'm going to need you to fix this by next year, or we're going to have to mark you developing on your evaluation, right? It should be such a safe environment that everybody comes together when something isn't going as we'd like.
Agreed. So let me try to make this as practical as I can too, because when I try to put myself in the mindset of the years I served as a principal, Jen, and I realize how hard it was to complete the work that was individually assigned to me, while at the same time adequately supervising the complexities in the works of other people. It's daunting. It just seems so overwhelming. Like, how am I supposed to get all the things done that are my own responsibilities and check in on the people who are managing their own? And so, and I'm not sure I don't have the silver bullet to that answer, but I do think it's important for us to come back to a sense that, that if, and I'm going to use the words that the researchers used in that describing that oil rig, if we are responsible for leading learning cultures, which is what schools are all about, then part of that responsibility is embracing the cycles of accountability that come in any kind of learning. So let's, you know me, Jen, let's make it simple. Let's go back to the classroom. And if I'm in the classroom and I'm trying to help students understand a complex idea or a new skill set, then I have to ask those two hard questions that we ask every time, which is, what is it that I wanted them to learn? And then how do I know they learned it? So I get to step back and ask those simple assessment questions. And that same thing applies to my own work and the work of my colleagues and the work when I'm looking at teachers. To make it something more than that turns it into something that's cumbersome, something that's onerous, something that's politically driven. We've got to bring it back to what it's really all about if we're going to do accountability, I think, in an effective, trusting way.
Absolutely. And we could do an entire episode on student accountability as well, because a lot of the times the accountability measures we're using for teachers are actually on the shoulders of the students and they don't even know. But their own accountability measures are not related in any way to the accountability measures that the adults in their lives are held to. And that's a pretty cabled sweater to unthread there, but it is worth thinking about, you know, how are we holding people accountable? How do we feel held accountable? And who is it that's kind of in the arena with us, to go with Brené Brown? Who's in there with us, aligning all these accountability measures and making us feel valued, even if things aren't going well? Because really, that's what it's about, right? At the end of the day, we want to feel valued. We want to feel like we went and did some good things with our day. And nobody likes to finish a day feeling like they were held accountable in unfair, unreasonable, irrational, or impossible ways.
I think one of the reasons that this book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, had me thinking so deeply about this, Jen, is because there's a part in the book where the author is talking about the last area of dysfunction, which is inattention to results. And he makes a point to say that collective bodies, groups of people who tend to not be paying attention to their collective results, are often falling into the trap of the individuals within that team being too concerned about their own individual results.
Right.
And so I think those two are connected. I think sometimes that accountability becomes a frustrating thing because we don't realize that both of those things have to be true at the same time.
Right.
That each person is unique and important, and they each have very important responsibilities for the work that they're doing, and their own self-satisfaction is important. Their autonomy is important. And at the same time, the flip side of that coin is that we're a part of a complex community that when all of our parts are working well together, then the overall outcome is better for everybody.
Right.
And so what I tend to see in schools that have systems of accountability or professional learning community conversations, or you fill in the gap, there's all kinds of different measures of ways that we're talking about accountability, is we tend to, I don't know, turn the focus on one, but not the other. Mm-hmm. We forget exactly. that both are important at the same time.
Exactly.
And so I just want to give Principal Matters listeners permission, as you're thinking about these things, to just remember your work is important and your individual autonomy and satisfaction is important. And so is that feeling for the people on your team.
Right.
But the collective work is important, because if we're not collectively doing these things together that are helping everyone achieve and grow, then we're also missing out on why we're here. We're not here for us.
Right.
We're here to serve others.
Well, and I, you know, Will, as we record these podcasts, I always imagine principals driving to work, right? It's their commute. And I always imagine them thinking, how does that apply to my school or to me? And I hope that there's some principals out there who hear this as, yes, a coin with two sides, or a Venn diagram where things cross over, or also, I would argue, a pendulum. In education, we are so incredible. We keep repeating this same problem. We go way too far one way, and then we go way too far the other. And I think accountability should be somewhere in the middle. We should use multiple measures. We should not swing one way or another. We shouldn't say test scores are everything and then say, well, that doesn't feel good. Test scores don't matter. We have to stay in the middle and let accountability stay in the middle too. And part of that is providing grace at times. It's providing support. It's providing trusting environments. And all of that is where I think accountability can become healthy rather than something that is harmful or makes us really, really scared.
So at the risk of going long, I want to make one other application. Let me just pick a role. Let me talk to the assistant principal for just a moment. And you have to, assistant principals are often involved in a lot of student discipline and behavior management. And so you're facing today, you're going to walk into a situation with a student who's done something that they should not have done. And you're going to be asking two questions at the same time. And these are both connected to accountability. Question one is, what is the best thing I need? What response can I have here that's going to be best for this student that's sitting right in front of me? And number two, what is my best response for this student, keeping in mind the impact that my decision will have on this whole community?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to think about the student, but then I have to think about the effect of my decision on the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to ask myself the question, how does the interest of this student and the whole community go hand in hand so that I'm making the wisest choice here so that I'm serving both?
Right. I'm not going to add a word to that because I think you just dropped the mic. I mean, you didn't literally. I can still see your mic, but yes. Yes.
So,
I think that's a great way to wrap up what we've been saying right there.
Yeah. So Principal Matters listeners, if accountability seems like a dirty word to you, it's probably because it's been applied in a way that makes you uncomfortable, either toward you, or maybe you've applied it towards others in ways that make them uncomfortable. So I just want to welcome us back to a perspective that helps us just keep those tensions in mind, so that hopefully as we're building teams that are trustworthy, that aren't afraid of conflict, that are committed to one another, that don't avoid accountability, and that have good results for our students and our school communities, we're doing it in a way that we keep people and the whole all in mind at the same time. Well, Jen, thanks for letting me just think about this with you today. And Principal Matters listeners, I want to thank you for being a part of today's conversation. Please reach back to Jen or to me if you've got questions, if you've got topics you want us to talk about on this show, or if you want to reach out to either of us as we're building our calendars for this coming school year, working with your staff or working with you individually or being a part of the professional development that you're doing. Jen, how can folks reach out to you?
They can find me at jenschwanke@gmail.com or my website, which, by the way, is going to have a refresh in the next few weeks, jenschwanke.com. So don't look at it. Well, wait a minute. By the time this airs, I think they can look at it. So
yeah, so go to jenschwanke.com or you can go to my website at williamdparker.com. Either way, we would love to hear from you. So until next time, thanks for doing what matters. We'll talk to you soon.
Ooh, thanks, everyone.
Find free resources like this one at williamdparker.com. Subscribe for our free weekly newsletter, which contains bonus material, and also check out the links for Grow Academies, Masterminds, Executive Coaching, and Keynote Presentations from my books, as well as from Principal Matters Associates. You can find out more under our speakers tab at williamdparker.com. Thank you for learning together, and thank you for doing what matters.